Welcome to Scale Her Up, the female entrepreneur show with me, Brenda Hector. I'm a business growth specialist helping business owners to develop themselves and grow their businesses so they can achieve their goals and enjoy the lifestyle they dream of. I'm on a mission to revolutionize the entrepreneurial landscape for women in business. In every episode, I interview someone who has an inspiring story or some great advice for women aiming to start or scale their businesses. If you're new to the show, take a moment to subscribe right now so you don't miss any upcoming episodes, and please check out the previous ones after listening to this. We have an awesome Facebook community. Just search for Scale Her Up and join in. Welcome to the Business Spotlight and the Scale Her Up podcast. I'm Brenda Hector from Action Coach, and I've been really looking forward to this interview. I've got Karen Smith of BWC Aberdeen in the spotlight today. So welcome, Karen. Thanks for coming.
Oh, thanks for inviting me, Brenda. Thank you.
You've got a really interesting story through business. But we'll maybe just start with the BWC and what it is that you do.
Yeah, okay. So BWC is Business Women Connections, and it's a franchise business. There was one established and running in Glasgow and one in Edinburgh. And I was approached probably 2022, at the time I was working, well, I thought I was working. And I said, no, I'm okay, thank you. I was kind of thinking this would be my last job that I was in. And the turn of 2023, I realized that my mental health was suffering. The job I was doing wasn't fulfilling. It wasn't really going anywhere. I was actually quite lonely. And I thought, no, there's must be more to life than this. And I'm not quite ready to give up. So I went and spoke to Lynn Hamilton, sorry, Lynn Kennedy, not Lynn Hamilton, Lynn Kennedy, who runs the franchise, and said, do you still need somebody for Aberdeen? She said, yes. So I had a meeting with her, signed the NDAs, looked at all the financials, and I just felt it was the right thing for me to do. I think having networked most of my life, I've been in sales all my life, really, more or less, and having networked a lot, it was apparent there wasn't a women's only networking in Aberdeen. I think Aberdeen being predominantly male oil and gas, there is lots of, no offense, grey suits, grey-haired men in the oil industry. But where do women entrepreneurs go, or where do women go who want to expand their professional and personal development? So I launched on the, so I turned 60 in the May, launched on the 1st of June, to 87 people at the Palm Court with a room that only held 60. So that was an interesting event. And it was evident from the get-go that this was needed in Aberdeen. So yeah, we're an all-women's networking group, and we have breakfasts, lunches, we have a Thirsty Thursday. And I think it's important for women that we don't just confine it to just a breakfast meeting at 6:30, because what if you've got children to get out the door? What if you're now the carer for elderly parents? You know, our lives need to be more flexible. And so I think having various touch points and various kind of meeting points, it gives women the flexibility to meet up and discuss and chat. So yes, it's going from strength to strength. We're heading up towards our 100 members, which is not bad considering we only launched in June last year, and
Amazing.
the feedback on it is just so positive. Yes, it's a great thing. Yes, very good.
It's a great group, and well done you. And I'm sure you're not lonely now with all
Oh,
those
no.
women to.
Nope, I'm not lonely or bored, and my mental health is fantastic. Yes, which is great. Yeah.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really good.
Fantastic. So what about Karen then? So when we met the other week, you told me about your journey, your career then.
Yes,
It's an interesting story that lots of the viewers and listeners will be keen to hear.
yeah. Well, I think, I started, I'm originally from Edinburgh. My parents were in their 40s when they had me. And they had both been, my dad had been in the RAF in the Second World War. This makes me sound really old, which I am. And my mother had worked in a munitions factory. And my brother was 18 and my sister was 13 when I was born. And so I came, from a kind of working class council background. My brother had left school and became a painter and decorator. My sister left school and went to work in an office. And so my parents just assumed that I would just follow the same. And I think I was in that kind of, that was the way I was brought up. That was the mindset. So I wasn't academic. I wasn't encouraged to be academic. And so I left school at 16 and became an office junior, as a lot of girls back in the, well, it was 1979 that I left school and became an office junior at the age of 16. And so I kind of worked in offices and just kind of, did what I was expected to do. But I don't know, there was always something in me that I knew that wasn't what I wanted to be or what I wanted to do, but it was kind of what I did do. And I was about 22, and my elder sister was chatting to me about something, and I said, "Yeah, I'm not going to work in an office for much longer. I want to wear power suits." So now we're in the 80s. "I want to wear power suits, and I want to have a company car and a briefcase and a Filofax." That was the biggie. And she laughed at me and said, "Well, how are you going to do that?" And I said, "Well, I'm not really sure, but that's how I kind of see myself. I see myself being a business person, not a typist. Not that there's anything wrong with being a typist or anything, but I thought I needed to be something else." And so moved forward a couple of years, and I was given the opportunity to interview for the press, and I'd moved up to Aberdeen by this point. And I'd been given the opportunity to interview at the Press and Journal to be a sales executive, which meant you got a company car and you could wear a suit. And I thought, well, that sounds like fun. That's what I want to do. And so I interviewed for them, got the job, and fortunately for me, it was during the time where Thomson's regional newspaper still owned the Press and Journal and the Scotsman, and the training came from America. And it was a fantastic training program. So at the age of 24, I was trained to be a salesperson, but properly, real hardcore newspaper advertising training. And I continued in newspaper advertising for quite a few years. And then got involved in recruitment, and I did some recruitment for a while. And then I was actually heading up I was a branch manager for a recruitment agency in Aberdeen, and the Press and Journal came back to me and said, "Our recruitment section of the newspaper is dying on its bottom." This was in the year 2000. Digital had started to come on board. And at that time, remember, the Press and Journal was a broadsheet, and every Friday you had sits vac, situations vacant, loads of jobs. Well, they had started to lose money, and that was the cash cow for a newspaper, was the sits vac. It's what cost the most amount of money to advertise. And they said to me, "Will you come back in? We'll give you a clean sheet of paper. You'd always been the top salesperson before. We'll just give you whatever you want." And so yeah, in 2000 I went back into the newspaper, and I think that was when I started to change from being a salesperson to being somebody whose opinions were valued. And I was fast tracked on the leadership team for Northcliffe, and that was owned by the Daily Mail Group. And so I had lots of training, further training on in that company, which was super. And I took the sits vac and put it into a tabloid insert called Your Job, and we became the most successful advertising department in the Northcliffe newspaper group. We were hitting targets of over £1 million revenue a month. It was massive. I mean, it was just massive.
How did you do that? What did you do different? What were the things that you changed?
So when you're in a recruitment agency, and so if you're selling advertising in a paper for a job, you're up against a recruitment company. So the lower level the job, the less money you pay the agency, because you're paying by percentage. And the higher the salary of a job, like a headhunter, the more percentage you're paying. So what I did was I introduced a sliding scale, because I didn't see why a wee Manny in an electrical shop who was looking for somebody part-time should have to pay the same amount of money for the white paper, the print, if you like. So we created a sliding scale of cost to allow people who didn't have the same kind of budget as the oil companies. Remember, back in the day, you'd open the paper and it was full of Total, Marathon, ExxonMobil at the time, blah, blah, blah. Now they've got bottomless pots of money, but this, your wee Manny round the corner, or if a small legal firm looking for a legal secretary or a paralegal or something like that, they don't have the same budget, but they were being charged the same amount of money, and I didn't think it was fair. So we created a sliding scale to enable it to become more affordable for everyone to advertise. And it worked. It was hugely successful. We started, I also had a thought about, why are we just doing it in print? Why are we not hosting recruitment events? So you would say to your main clients, let's get a hotel room, let's have a recruitment event, and let's get people face to face with you. So you would have your advert in the paper. So thinking about how we were adding, there was no value add at the time in newspaper advertising. It was just, well, there's the paper, we're the Press and Journal, we're the most successful read and the most got the most coverage, which they did, of anyone in the UK. But no added value or no kind of like client relationship building or anything like that. So we started doing recruitment events in Inverness and Aberdeen, and then we did a fantastic magazine for offshore Europe, because if you've got all of these people coming to Aberdeen and in the one place, why are you not doing a magazine for jobs, so that's satisfying again and giving value back to your client who are spending vast sums of money every week or every month or whatever. So yeah, we started picking up all the newspaper awards for the UK. We're coming our way, and then I took over the business section of the paper as well. So the Energy Voice was kind of like my domain as well. So the two kind of biggest corporate, biggest earners, and we were at one time we were producing 96% of the revenue for the whole of the Aberdeen journals, which was quite phenomenal. I did a presentation to Lord Rothermere, who owns the Daily Mail Group. That was quite stressful. In fact, that was more than stressful. That was the time where I was so well prepared for a presentation and got on the stage and bottled it. I completely bottled it. My bottom lip went, like proper went. I was absolutely terrified. It took me quite a while to compose myself, and it was evident I was struggling. And then I didn't do any public speaking for 12 years because it terrified me. To freeze in front of such an esteemed audience was horrendous, absolutely. And I was still quite young as well, and it was just, and I didn't have any mechanisms. Nobody had given me any tools. I'd been given this great presentation, but nobody had worked with me to get me pitch ready, if that makes sense. And public speaking is something you should be trained to do, properly, especially if your bottom lip goes and you decide you want to just sit down on the stage and cry. That's not a good look. And so that was phenomenal. And I think that's probably where I started to think, the managing and the leading and the motivating and the ideas and the enthusiasm, that's where I started to see that that's where, my strengths were lying. And through that time, I'd done a postgrad in business management, and I had gone back and done further education and all this kind of thing. And then I was approached by a company who were a recruitment training and HR consultancy business. And they wanted me to come in and help them grow the business and diversify. So they were clients of mine at the paper. So I did, I left the journals. I kind of felt that I went out on a, and I went out as the blue-eyed golden girl. So it was a good place to stop and do something else. And so I became sort of commercial, really commercially focused within a small, within an SME. We had, like 20 members of staff, and so it was my job to feed the consultants. So I had HR training and recruitment consultants. It was my job to go out and do the client relationship and come up with the ideas and build the, build the business to bring back to feed them their work, if you like. And I was there for 15 years, and eventually I became a shareholder director. Invested, personal money into the business, created the Cherry Awards, which was fantastic. Grew it from a small event the first year at the Markcliffe with like 230 people. And the last year I did it in 2014, I had 687 at the exhibition centre.
So for anyone who's not familiar or maybe not local to us, maybe just explain what the charities.
The Cherries are HR recruitment and training awards. So it's like the Oscars of the HR community. And I think at the time in Aberdeen, there was an awful lot of recognition going on to the oil companies. There was your offshore industry awards, or there was anything to do with tech or oil. But there was nothing really supporting the HR people who were supporting these men. Predominantly men in business. So yeah, the cherries were, and everyone said, why the cherries? And I said, well, the cherries, if you look at the logo, you make the H a capital and you make the first R a capital, and it's got HR within it, and it's like the cherry on the cake, of you win it, it's the cherry on your cake. Nothing to do with popping your cherry, although quite a few people did get to pop their cherry when they won their first award. So we recognized that there was a, that you could pop your cherry by winning an award, and it became, and it's still running. The newspaper group who used to own the Press and Journal, actually DC Thompson, everything goes in circles, as they say. They now run it very successfully, and it's still going from strength to strength. So yeah, that was a great period, and I think as well, for. And to be somebody who, came from a working class council education, left school with nothing. When I bought into the business and became a shareholder, and my name was on something at Companies House, and it was quite phenomenal. I mean, I felt, really pleased. I was really chuffed with my wee self. Really, I was. I was, quite
It
chuffed.
sounds like, do you know the term intrapreneur? So it's like an entrepreneur, but within an organization. So like having that sort of being the person that's there, having to have the ideas and thinking differently and changing the way that things are done. Is that how you would describe yourself?
Yes, I would. And it's interesting because so many times people have said to me, why have you not gone out and done it yourself? And I think confidence, and I think lack of belief that I could grow a business on my own, even although you're successful within a business. So I think, yes, you're right. That is the difference between an entrepreneur and an entrepreneur, is I've never had the total confidence and self-belief that I could do it completely on my own. So I think you're absolutely right. That's a really good word for it. And
I think entrepreneurs are really important though. It's important that you have people that think like that within organizations.
Well, and the other great thing about it is, from my perspective, if I'd gone out and become self-employed at a very young age, I wouldn't have had all the personal development opportunities, as in, all this. I mean, I've had some amazing training, and then that's escalated to, leadership training and all that kind of thing. And I wouldn't have had that, because self-employed people very rarely invest that money on themselves. Which, so I think, now what I'm doing is I've got all of this, experience, age, learnings, and all of the kind of courses that I've been on. And I've always found it really funny that I hated school. I hated school with a passion. But if you say to me, you're gonna go on this course and learn this, I'm like there with a notebook, and I'm the top swot, and I'm the kind of bringing the apple in for the teacher. I love it, and I can't understand. So it's funny how you always say, or I always say, I'm not academically clever, but I'm smart. And I think there's, I'm going off tangent, but again, we've had this conversation, Brenda. I think it's a shame that so many kids nowadays are being, it's university, 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 university. And it's like, well, no, actually, because not everybody can, not everybody should. There's so many routes to becoming happy and successful, that it doesn't always mean that you have to go and, spend 4 years of your life, get into a huge amount of debt, and actually hate every minute of it because it's not natural to you. So yeah, it certainly worked well for me. And it's worked well for a lot of women actually in the group in BWC. We had a conference last week and there were six speakers and I think it was only two went to university. And yet they're successful.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
do you want to go and close that blind or something?
It is closed, but I'm
Oh,
going to
goodness.
actually. Yes, I know it's so bright. Hold on, sunny Stonehaven. Hold on a second. Let me pull this over again. That's better. That's even better. Yes, that's.
We can cut that bit out.
Yeah, the Riviera. That is Stonehaven. Yeah. So, where were
So
we?
you were a director,
Oh
of
yes. And then 2014, 2015 hit. So in
for anyone
2015.
who's not local
Yes,
Aberdeen
local,
might
sorry.
not quite be aware of what happened in 2014, 2015.
Yeah, so in Aberdeen had been known as the city of Bentley and Bollinger's, and we had survived lots of financial crisis, particularly the 2008, 2009 downturn.
Didn't
Aberdeen
notice
was.
at all, did
We didn't even notice it. We were still drinking Bollinger and driving Bentleys. Not personally, not the Bentleys.
we? Me either, sadly.
No. And but 2014, 2015, we had the barrel price plummeted. And if the barrel price plummets in Aberdeen, and it wasn't a blip, it was a long term.
A long period, wasn't it?
Long, long period, and it really impacted on the city that for probably 30 years had really not had any impact on anything that had gone on in the global economy. And unfortunately, the business went bankrupt. We went into liquidation. And I think probably, I not think, or probably, one of the worst experiences apart from losing your parents or grief for family members that die. Losing a business that you've invested 15 years of your life in, you become a family, you become close. So it was the worst career grieving situation that I'd found in 2015. It was horrendous. Because you're not just losing your job, everybody around you is losing their job. And you lose people through it as well because of, let's say that not everybody's on the same page at the same time. So it was a horrible process to go through.
Some people need someone to blame, and and
Yeah,
yeah.
yeah. So arguments happen and fallouts and, yeah, it's just and of course the biggest driver behind it all is there's money involved. The minute you've got, cash in the business, and everybody who was who was a director shareholder, we had cash in the business. So yeah, a horrible situation really. And I think, as I say, I can't underestimate, it was awful. A lot of tears and a lot of sadness and yeah, terrible thing to happen. Yeah, awful. And I then in October 2015 came out on my own. So what I did to kind of help lick my wounds was I'd spent 15 years in an SME where you don't get a lot of development for yourself. So I went to a place in Glasgow called the Ken Harvey Institute and I did my qualification to become a coach, a business coach, and my facilitation qualification. And it was really therapeutic for me to go through the coaching experience, because as you'll know, Brenda, when you become a coach, you are coached as well as coaching, and there was a lot of tears during that journey because it was uncovering a lot of thing in a lot in me. So it was it, you know, although I had paid to do this, I got a double dip. I got therapy and I got the coaching experience. Yeah, which was. And I would never underestimate the power of having some sort of coaching or therapy when you've gone through something, gone through a trauma, really. And it helped refocus me. So I October 2015, I came back out as Karen Reid Consulting. I was Karen Reid at the time. And And was self-employed in a really tough market. Like, you know, who the hell launches their own business for the first time in their life in 2015 when this city was on its knees? And I worked away quite happily for about 18 months. And unfortunately, there was outplacement work to cover off, but also I was working with a lot of people using Belbin, the behavioral tool, which is very good for helping people understand if they've got the right salespeople and the right team in place
Team roles,
to
isn't it? Yeah.
perform, team roles. So I used Belbin. I'm accredited to use Belbin, so I would use Belbin because a lot of companies who had been used to business coming through an open window were all of a sudden finding that the people who were called salespeople weren't salespeople. They were actually just order takers or just really good at golf. And so I was going into companies and helping them to understand the kind of behaviors that would be required to have somebody who hunted for business and somebody who farmed for business. So predominantly they had farmers, but they didn't have the hunters. And it's a very different mindset and a very different person who goes out and creates business. So I was fortunate in a way that the market was so bad because it actually lent itself very well to my strengths and what I could do. But what I noticed was being self-employed. What I noticed was I was kind of lonely and I really missed my team. I really missed the kind of teamwork and the camaraderie. And I was approached by Stuart Milne Homes. They were one of my biggest clients that I'd brought into the consultancy business previously. And I had built a good relationship up with some of the MDs and the HR director. And they said, "We're struggling to sell houses." And again, a house builder in the oil and gas industry of Aberdeen had just kind of launched a site, and people would queue overnight in cars
Used
to
to
remember
come home,
that.
didn't they? Yes.
Yeah. So they would just like be queuing to get a house, and they could set a price of whatever they wanted. So of course our housing prices were higher than everywhere else. And what they were noticing now, this we were now in 2016, and they noticed that they didn't have salespeople. They had great administrators. But they weren't selling houses, and which is quite ironic when every other part of the world was, you know, in real estate or a new build or whatever. They had salespeople, we didn't. So they created a role for me and asked me if I would come in and manage the all their developments, 13 of them between Dundee and Afford, with their sales team, and work with the sales team to turn them into salespeople. And there's some people you can do that with, and there's some people you can't. So enough said on the what, you know, that kind of side of it. It was a bit, I suppose it sounds a bit harsh, but if you're meant to be a salesperson, you're not a salesperson, well, there's not a job for you. And created a wonderful sales team, and
Well,
coached them.
let's just think if my audience are business people, what are your tips on getting the best salespeople? What do
What do I look for?
you, yeah. Or what do you how do you train them?
I think it's not training. It's
That's
funny.
hiring attitude, yeah.
I had this conversation with somebody yesterday, and I said, I've never run a sales training day in my life, because I can't. So, you know, from the age of 24 to now, I don't. It's in me. It's whatever I do is just here. It's just there. I can't. It's a bit like some days, you know, if you drive from Aberdeen to Dundee, and sometimes you're coming past the BP garage just at the outside of Dundee, and you think, how did I get here? Because you've been so busy in your head. I mean, you're driving, you're fully, but you're not actually focused on what gear you're in or, you know, da 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 da, because it's sometimes it does become an automatic, you know, way that you just drive. So, and I think that's a bit like, so I could never teach somebody to drive. I can never train them in selling. So I would always go out and bring in sales trainers, But my job then is to coach them and mentor them and get them to understand what they've heard on the training course and how they put it into practice. So I think that's, yeah, my style is definitely more working alongside and encouraging them and talking to them about, well, what, tell me about your journey with that specific customer. What happened? Where are we at with it now? Have you tried this? Have you tried that? What do you think? How would you feel if you did it this way? You know, that kind of. So that's definitely, but I think a good salesperson.
Do you think it's that they've got it in them, and if they don't have it, that you can't develop it? Do you think
No,
it's
I
never?
think anyone can be trained to
Okay.
sell, but there's different ways of doing it. And I think the biggest thing is, you know, and it's such an old-fashioned thing to say, people buy people. Well, if I'm interviewing somebody and I don't take an instant, if there's not something warm, honest, and friendly and open when I'm sitting with somebody, if they're not like that, they're not going to be like that, and they have to be like that in front of in front of customers or clients or whatever. You have to have that ability to be honest and open and warm and friendly, and it has to come naturally to you. And if it doesn't come naturally to you, you can't train that. That's something that is just never going to be trained. The actual techniques of selling can be trained, but who you intrinsically are as a person, that can't be trained. So I think, so I always look for now, and that doesn't mean that, you know, like in certain sectors where you need to have like such an you have to be so clever to have a technical specific sales that it's not actually selling, it's your technical expertise that will do it. So I think it depends on who your audience is. So it's very difficult to say that's the behavior you look for in a salesperson, because it actually depends what they're selling and to who. But if you're dealing with Joe Public, the first thing you've got to be is approachable, honest, warm, friendly, all those kind of things, and put them at ease. And especially when you're about to take the largest amount of money off them that they'll ever spend in their life, they've got to feel that you know what you're talking about. So you have to know your product inside out. You have to be passionate about your product. And I think you've always got to give something off yourself. Because for people to buy you, you've got to give yourself first. So that's kind of the way I always looked at it. So we created a wonderful team, and we turned it around, which was fantastic. Now, the downside of turning it around is when they've created a role for you and you're training up somebody to be a sales manager, there gets a point where you're earning too much money and they need to get. So I did myself out of a job, which, you know, I could see it coming over the hill, and I knew it was going to come and I knew it was going to happen. But I hated it all the same, because it's the first time in my life I've been made redundant. Being a director shareholder, you're not made redundant. It's like that's even worse. But getting made redundant is also, especially when they actually say it's not you, and you go, well, actually, I know it is me, you know. But and so
Well,
emotionally and
that's
mentally.
positive. It's positive. It is you because you did the job and you achieved what you
What you set out to do.
yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And probably ruffled quite a lot of feathers along the way. You can't, you know, go into a job like that that's been running in an organization that has been running successfully and not go in there and start questioning people at the top, because what they've been doing hasn't been right.
Oh, don't be afraid to ruffle the feathers, yeah?
Don't be afraid. Yeah, it's not going to make you everyone's favorite person internally, but my job was to make sure the external people loved us, not, you know, the internal people. It's nice of people like you, but yeah, I did ruffle. I definitely ruffled feathers. I know I did. Anyway, so yeah, I was made redundant, and I thought, oh crikey, what the hell am I going to do now? So I was then approached to talk to the guy who's running the Urie Estate, the golf course. That's a golf course outside Stonehaven. Which is 16 miles south of Aberdeen, and it's a fantastic big estate. And he is wanting to launch a Jack Nicklaus Championship golf course with houses, like gorgeous houses. And so he approached me and said, "Would you want to come and be my sales and marketing director?" And I thought, well, that's a great way to end your career, selling massive houses. for massive amount of money to very rich people from all over the world. How interesting. It's in the town that I live in. Great for the community. Everything was ticking its boxes. I was thinking, this is the way to go out, Karen. This is fantastic. And but he needed me to wait about, probably about a year, up to a year for him, because his planning permission, everything wasn't right. So I took a job with a builder, and I sold houses, because I thought, well, actually, I've managed all these people. But what if I actually can't sell a house myself? It's all very well, you've got a sales team, but what if I can't actually sell a house? So I thought, well, I'll take a job in the meantime whilst I'm waiting on him, and I'll see if I can sell houses. And I would have to say, Brenda, I had the most fun ever. It was like, what a great job. I mean, it was absolutely fantastic. I was selling lovely houses to lovely people, and handing them their keys, it's just such a joy. And I absolutely, I nailed it. Like, I didn't just nail it. I had like sales managers from other competitors phoning me up, asking me if I was fudging my figures, because I was outselling anybody, which was great, because when I was selling, I'd always been the top. So it was really good to know that. And I used to phone the girls on the Stuart Milne sites and say to them, "Oi, you sold this week?" "No." And they say, "Have you done it?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And they were like, "How are you doing this?" And I said, "If you had only done exactly as I had told you to do when I was managing you, you would earned a lot more money." It was such a great thing to do. I loved it. But it wasn't where I wanted to, end my career, if you like. So I went and worked with the Urie Estate. Planning permissions weren't coming through. The list of things that were going against them, Jack Nicholas being sued by the Nicholas Corporation, planning permissions not coming through, the Morrison supermarket falling away. Oh, like the list is endless. And so what was happening was my job was getting, I was working less and less. And so eventually I was employed to do 3 days a week, which that sounds nice. But I wasn't actually even doing 3 days a week. And people were saying to me, "But what's your problem? You're getting paid." Now, therein lies the problem. As I said at the start, I was sitting here bored. You're not actually not working. So it's not like if your friends who are retired say to you, "Oh, we're going away we're going away midweek. Do you want to come with us?" I could, because I wasn't doing anything, but you can't, because you're actually employed. So you have to, so you're in this dreadful kind of no man's land, and I was really struggling. As I said at the beginning, I was lonely, I was bored, and then the BWC story, and so that's how we've, and I'm finishing, hopefully, well, I will be finishing my career, because at this age, when you've got your bus pass, I don't think there's going to be much else. I don't think, suppose Alan Sugar is knocking on my door to be his next apprentice. So this is a great way for me to finish, because I'm passionate about what I do. I'm meeting wonderful women who have got amazing stories to tell, and I'm also, I suppose, supporting some of them as well. And we have a mentoring program, and I'm mentoring some people, and oh yeah, it's just what a way. And it's not really work. Well, it is work. I mean, obviously, there are some days where it's definitely work. The build up to the awards, definitely work. Build up to the conference last week, definitely work. But it doesn't feel like work. It feels very enjoyable and very satisfying.
Well, I can't remember who said it, but when you find something that you truly love, you'll never work another day in your
Another day
life.
in your life. Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, I think the only other thing I would like to do that I wished I'd opened a restaurant, because I love cooking and people say I'm very good at it. So I think that would have been the other thing. But again, that just brings people, helping them in business or feeding them is a nice thing to do. So I'm getting to be and do
So
nice things.
what are the, I mean, so that are employed women that join BWC, and that are
Self-employed.
business, yes,
Yeah, business owners.
entrepreneurs, whatever. And what is it that are there common threads? Because you've been through both. You've been through a lot of employed roles and self-employed roles. What are the common threads and the challenges that these women are facing? You know, why do we need to come together in groups like BWC?
I think it was interesting, Karen Arthur last week, because Karen was one of the speakers, and I said to her, be very careful when we're talking about when you're talking to the women about business, because some of them are employed and some of them are business owners, blah blah blah. And so we've got, there's we're ranging from a one woman band right up to, people who are in corporate organizations as lawyers and accountants or in HR or whatever, and everything in between. I said, so she said, well, what about self leadership? And I think that's a great word. I love that, the self leadership, because it doesn't matter whether you're working for yourself, with yourself, or with a team, and you've got team that people you've got to motivate and look after, or you're working within a large organization within a team, whether you're a manager or not, the most important thing is self-leadership. You've got to be able to lead yourself, motivate yourself, keep yourself, all the kind of things that you expect a manager to do. You've got, first and foremost, you've got to do it for yourself. So I thought self-leadership, so we talked a lot about that. But I think the common ground that we have is, it's interesting, Brenda, when you come along to one of the meetings, and I don't know how it's happened, but it has, and I'm now it's my job to protect it. The warmth, the friendliness, and the enthusiasm in the meetings is, it's like nothing else I've ever seen in any other networking. And people must go, yeah, it's a bunch of women. That must be horrendous, because there must be, well, let's say what everybody think, there must be bitches out there, and there must be, backstabbing, and there must be this. No, there isn't, because we're not 15-year-olds in a playground. We're mature, professional businesswomen who have joined because the common goal is we want to help and support each other in this journey that we call business. And whether you join it and get something out of it for your business, i.e., you're the business owner, and you own Planet Tasteful, as Lynn Hamilton does, and her sales have increased since she's joined BWC because she sells women's clothes and we're women. Go figure. Or Shona at Bloom has got people who now come to Bloom to get a haircut because she talks about it in the so. They're getting tangible pennies in the till, if you like. Whereas there's other women there who are just getting the support, the personal growth, they're being motivated by being around all these other people. And the other thing as well is we all understand what it's like to be a woman in business. So the common thread is we all understand what it's like to have, well, if you either have children or you don't have children, but ultimately the woman's job is to run the house, and I'm not saying men don't do it, but generally speaking, is the washing on, is a bonny day, is it out, what's for tea tonight, who's been to the supermarket, what the kids need for school tomorrow, oh, your mum and dad have got hospital appointments this week, whatever it happens to be, the chances are predominantly it's us. And there we are collectively, two, three times a month, all sharing the same journey. And we don't spend all day bitching about men or husbands. We very rarely talk about them. But we all understand what it feels like. And I think that's the thread. Whether you're 24, as my youngest member is, or 76, fundamentally, we're all in business and we're all there to support each other. Yeah, I think that's the common thread. Does that, did, with that, did that,
That answers it really well. And I've been along. I'm becoming a member. I think it's a great group, and you're right, really warm and friendly, and a great group.
yeah, it really is. And I think it is because we're all there for the same purpose. And we've got one member, it's hilarious, she won't mind me saying it, Donna Hutchison at Aberdeen Cerinians. She's the least girly girl you'll ever meet. Her words, not mine. And the thought of an all-women's networking group made her blood run cold. And she loves it. Which is great. So even if you're not a girl, because it's not girly girl stuff, that's the funny. Oh, not all the time. Yeah, not all the time. There is occasionally. We've got an event coming up, which will be more lifestyle, which will be the first one we've done, which will definitely be a lifestyle orientated. But women in business like to know that, their hair's all right, they've got the right clothes on, their skin's okay, da 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 da, that
About
they're.
confidence, isn't it? You
So
know,
yeah.
and health, health and well-being.
Yes, health and well-being. Yeah, absolutely. So we're
Means that you
there.
can perform better in all of your roles as a mother, as a wife, as a
Business.
running the house, running the business,
Yeah,
being a woman. Yeah.
whichever hat. As I always say to my husband when we go on holiday and I put the suitcase when we arrive somewhere on the bed, I won't use the words I normally use, Brenda, because this is in the public domain. I open the case and I go, oh, look at that. That washing and ironing fairy's been in again. Because they just turn up and
Yeah.
it's just there for them, and
That's
that's the way we have to, that's the way we roll as women. There's going to be some men watching this going, she's talking a load of rubbish, because I do it all, but majority of the
Yeah,
cases is us.
I think they're in the minority, but
I think so as well, definitely.
so
Yeah.
what's the goals then? What does the future hold for BWC?
Oh my goodness. Yeah, I've got a couple of things. So we had our first leadership conference last Thursday, which was going to be an annual event, but the feedback is, could I do another one in September? So,
Oh, brilliant.
yep, I
I
think
hope
we'll
I can
be.
attend that one. I was
Yes,
at
I will. Yes.
the conference last week and I
That's
can't
right.
get it,
Yeah,
so.
well, I hope so too. So I'll look into doing one in September. A big thing that I've got coming up in, well, we have the Athena Awards again on November the 15th this year. That's a biggie. But one of the something that I'm really excited about is I'm doing an event on the 3rd of June for 14 to 16-year-old girls.
Fantastic.
I'm targeting Aberdeen City Schools. I'm working with DYW, Developing Young Workforce, and SDS Skills Development Scotland. So I approached them and said, I feel that in schools, if you've got a 14 to 16-year-old girl who doesn't know what they want to be, is not engaged academically, is maybe the one that's hanging about the school playground more often than they should be. And it's really perhaps not even getting the kind of encouragement from home, and for whatever reason. And the guidance teachers will naturally say to them, well, be a hairdresser or go into care, work in a care home or work with young children. Now, that's great. If you want to be a hairdresser and you're creative and that's your passion, fantastic. And if you have that lovely nurturing instinct in you, that means that you're capable of wiping an old person's bottom. Good on you. I couldn't, but respect to you. But they're not getting told that there's so much more than that. So I want it to be called Hair Care, No Dare. So dare to do something different. And we're, as a group of women in BWC, we're going to show them what is out there and what you could do. And actually, don't worry if you can't go into further education. Leave school with the best you can, arm yourself with as much as you're potentially capable of getting. That, and if that's all, if you only get one or two, that's all you get. Don't flog yourself to death. Let's show you that there's other roads and other routes that you can take. So for me personally, I'd like to leave a legacy to 14 to 16-year-old girls who are being told by their guidance teachers not enough information. Or being told the wrong thing. And I'd like to have a group of 14 to 16-year-old girls that I can watch flourish and grow. That's kind of my, and I'd like the women in BWC to maybe use them over this, use them, work with them, share with them, take a journey with them, find out if they want to shadow them in the school holidays. Do you want to come in and see what I do? Do you want to come in? Actually, I'm really crap at social media. Do you want to come and do some stuff for me? Do you want to show me how to do it? That and so maybe we can just start creating this lovely group of 14 to 16-year-old junior BWCs that can come up through.
Oh, you've given me goosebumps just telling about it. I had no idea about that. That's amazing.
Oh
Yeah.
yeah, that's definitely, I'm
Yeah.
big on that. I'm big on it. Yeah, really, because I just think nowadays there's so much put on. They've got so much stress with social media and bullying and body image and Oh God. And then somebody's hammering them to go to university, or what do you want to do? Actually, I haven't got a bloody clue. Get off my case. I don't know. And I didn't know what I wanted to do. Some people get to their 40s and they still don't know what they want to do. It's like, stop it, give them a break. You don't have to go to university. If you can, brilliant. If you can go to college, brilliant. If you can, also brilliant, but let's show you what you can do.
Oh, I love it. That's brilliant. And I think I usually ask at the end of a scale her up podcast interview about what do you think we can do. So in entrepreneurship, only one in three entrepreneurs in the UK is female, and men are five times more likely to scale their business up to over 1 million. But there's no reason.
Somebody's at my door. Can you give me
Of
two?
course.
Can I pause? Hold on.
No problem. I just paused it there and started again.
Sorry.
So yeah, only one in three entrepreneurs in the UK are female, and men are five times more likely to scale their business up to over 1 million in turnover. And I want to see that change. What might be an obvious question, but what do you think we can do as women in business to help make that change?
Create better platforms for them to communicate with each other, support each other more, encourage each other, show them the way, show them how it can be done. And I think that's all we can do. Unfortunately, I think, Deborah, until we get to the point where men can have babies and men can stay at home, there's always going to be that gap in a woman's career. Whether that's a 2 week gap or a 2 year gap, but ultimately it does. And so I think if women are going to have children, that horrible balance between how do you have it all is the most difficult one. So I think we just have to, I think banks and lending companies are getting better, and they're certainly, Eagle Labs and Barclays, and they're creating space for women and all this kind of thing. So I think it's getting there. It's horrible. 200 2024, and it's getting there. I mean, it's even like, how many female leaders are there in the world? Very few. How many leaders are in banking, or how many are the actual CEOs, and the minority? It's still the minority. And I think it is this, because how do you have it all if you want to have a family as well? That's the crux. How do you have it all?
I know it's not my interview, it's yours, but I don't think men don't have it all either.
No, they don't.
Thinking about my husband having to fly to Houston on the morning of my daughter's 10th birthday. So that I think, yeah, and
We
that's
can't, yeah.
there are compromises that have to be made, and maybe we're less willing to make the compromises, and there's a price to pay for that.
There's a price to pay for it. So I think it's great that there's one in three of us now. I think that's a great stat, and I want that to continue. But I also am very aware that as women, we have to support each other if we make that choice that it's time to stand back, or actually that. And I think that's where I constantly strive in BWC to make sure people who are working in organizations are as important as the women who are going out there and becoming. So the entrepreneurs are as important as the entrepreneurs, because we've all got a part to play in the business.
That's brilliant. That's a perfect place to stop. I could chat to you all day, Karen. And thank you very much for being in.
Thank you, Brenda. That's my first one. Oh,
You were great. You were awesome. Thank you so much.
great. Thanks, Brenda. I hope to see you soon.
Thanks for listening to Scale Her Up, the Female Entrepreneurs Show. Don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes, and join our Facebook community at Scale Her Up. Please connect with me, Brenda Hector, on social media and drop me a message to let me know how you're enjoying the podcast, or even better, pop up a review. I'll finish by reminding you that only one in three UK entrepreneurs are female, and men are five times more likely to scale their business to over 1 million in turnover than women are. If we started and scaled our businesses to the same extent as men, it would add £250 billion to the UK economy and provide millions of jobs. Ladies, you can do it and make a massive difference.